So basically, I'm going to, I've got the advantage, actually. Steve, as many of you know, is official title, Steve, you're the Fellowship Services
Team Leader.
You get closer. I know what he does is field all the inquiries. He fields all the inquiries, he fields all the emails, and it is one of the first points of contact for the fellowship. So through a combination of paying attention, osmosis, being there a long time, and lots of experience, he has a wealth of experience in a variety of areas that just, you know, happen. So that's a huge advantage to me because he has a much broader experience than I do as to what sort of challenges come up for the fellowship. So I'm going to turn this over to Steve, let him kind of start with the layout, but maybe I'll foreshadow what we hope to do here is have a little bit of introduction, talk about some of the challenges between regional service committees, RSOs, boards of directors, how those legal and spiritual accountability processes might work, and then have some, I think we're going to do small group, larger presentation with some small group discussions on the topics, and hopefully get some information. Yeah.
Can we invite God into the conversation?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. So why don't we go ahead and pause for a moment of silence. It can be a long moment. And then we'll follow that with a serenity prayer for those who wish to join us in doing so. Thank you. God,
grant us serenity to accept things that I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
So, I'm going to ask you, Steve. And, you know, it was interesting. We were talking before the session started. This topic, this idea, Dave and the program committee brought the idea forward, or the, you know, the relationship between the legal entities. Hard kiss, that's nice. and the legal entities and the service committees that created them was on his list. And we also have seen situations where the legal entities, whether it be an RSO or a convention corporation or some other, those are the two basic entities that we see incorporate, but I'm sure there's other ones out there because this is Narcotics Anonymous, there's always more, where they get confused about the nature of their relationship. And what they're guided by, and whether or not they are in fact autonomous. And there's been a couple of examples of situations where there's been that misunderstanding across the fellowship that end up coming to us to help in some ways to sort it out. So we've seen this come up a couple of times too. And then also, you may or may not be aware that we are intending to develop some resources for convention and events this cycle. One of our hopes is to have a booklet or a toolbox for conventions and events. We did a session downstairs on that earlier today. And certainly one of the topics associated with conventions and events oftentimes is incorporation. And I will tell you, it's the convention committees more often than the service office people who kind of get confused about what their legal status is and what their spiritual status is in considering our traditions. So we hope to collect some information from this that may end up filtering in or feathering into some of the discussions associated with convention best practices too. Let me see if I call all the details. Oh yeah, this is an important one. It is not our intention to provide legal advice in this session.
Yes.
In case you haven't figured it out yet, I'm not an attorney. If I was, I'm not sure I'd admit it to this group. But I'm not an attorney, and I'm not a CPA, and neither Jack nor I are here to talk about the legal aspects. Although, you know, it's hard not to start talking a little bit about the legalities of this stuff, but it's really about the spiritual aspect and the you know, the guidance of our traditions that are the underlying premise of this discussion.
Yeah, and now that we've just said we're not going to talk about legal, I'd like to
talk about legal entities.
Yeah. I also want to acknowledge Katana here from the World Court as well. Yeah. I think most of you know that, but I forgot to do that. So the reason a discussion of legal entities is important is it kind of lays a foundation for this discussion as a whole. And most of the comments we're making generally apply to North America, United States, in this particular topic, although there are some things that would apply to other parts of the world as well. Many of you, I'm sure, have encountered in your service efforts somebody calling and says, my home group needs a proof that we're a nonprofit for some reason or other. Or we're trying to do a PR event and the local fair or convention says, if we're nonprofit, it's how do we show we're nonprofit? And these are the kinds of challenges that people routinely, I mean, I field calls like this, as I'm sure many of you do, several times a year. And there's a lack of awareness, I think, of what a nonprofit is, what a legal entity is. And although we aren't going to give legal opinions, I think we can disseminate some legal facts. There are some facts in IRS publications of what most NA groups and communities probably are, which is defined as a, quote, unincorporated association of individuals. Similar to a model railroad club or maybe a local Boy Scout thing that's not connected to something. It's an association of individuals that get together. They often have a small treasury. I think the limits before you have to do certain things are relatively small, but you can have some money that goes through without having to have an official legal status. And the IRS recognizes those things exist, and I think wisely doesn't intend to make people necessarily go through a whole process of becoming a legal entity. Legal entities, generally, when you get into conventions and other things, are required in order to have contracts. I mean, many of us have heard the discussions in the United States as a corporation, a person, they shouldn't be, and regardless of whether how you feel philosophically, it's very common now if we're doing events or having relationships with hotels and outside organizations, they want to be doing business with, well, frankly, I think with somebody they can sue or hold accountable. They want a legal entity on the other side. So that puts our fellowship often in the situation where some of them identify the need to be a corporation that's elected under the Chapter 501c. So it's a corporation that then elects under the 501c to be a nonprofit corporation. You want to add to that?
No, you're good.
Okay. All right. So as a general statement in the United States, I would say most NA home groups and areas do not need to be 501c corporations to comply with law. There may be people that think they need to be, but that's generally not true. We do, though, have entities, service offices, some regions, some convention corporations, that because of the either the transactions they do or the amount of dollars that flow through their bank accounts, under U.S. tax law, they really need to be an established entity. And from a practical perspective, they can't do the business of the fellowship without having that. So, any more on legal entities? Oh, no, I'm going to send you to interrupt your relationship.
Your numbers are good.
All right.
I get lots of phone calls about can we have the NA, can we have the Narcotics Anonymous tax ID number? I'm a group, I want my regional's EIN because we're doing something. We're signing a contract or we're trying to get a facility where they'll give a discount to nonprofits and, you know, we're a nonprofit fellowship, so, you know, can you give me proof of nonprofit status of my group? So we've got these confusions. My guess is this group of people probably are, that discussion is probably beyond most of the people in this room. Most of you understand those nuances and those differences. But if you don't hesitate to, you know, stop and ask a question along the way. With that, getting back to the point that I was making earlier, the inquiries that we get where a service office or a service committee, a convention committee, here's the way it usually goes. An area service committee wants to have a convention, or a regional service committee wants to have an office. And so they have the event, or they open up the facility, and they realize, you know what, we've got a lot of money moving here, we need to be incorporated. We were signing contracts, we need to be incorporated. So they create the corporation. At some point down the road, there's a pile of money. Usually it takes a pile of money. Usually without the money, we're pretty much okay. But there's a pile of money, $5,000, $10,000, maybe $50,000. And along the way, the people who manage the legal entity, the 501c3, typically it's a C3, become the experts. you know, I mean, they understand what it is their responsibility is. They are charged with managing an office or overseeing a convention, and they feel pretty well equipped at it. They feel, in fact, I mean, they might not call themselves this, but they feel kind of like the experts, you know, and especially at the area level, you'll have a group of trusted servants managing this 501c, and this will be the area service committee. You guys are the experts, and this is the ASC, and by the way, the ASC is comprised of what? You know, GSRs with about 90 days clean.
90
days clean. Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe it's a composition of anybody from 90 days to 30 years clean, and with any amount of service history that might be, you know, 2 weeks to decades. And typically, the area service committee doesn't have the kind of foundation that the corporation, the guys and gals that are out managing the corporation, have a great deal of confidence in. They begin to feel like the experts, and they begin to look at these folks over here in a they lose connection of the subordinate relationship. They begin to feel like they know what's best for this pile of money. And again, it usually takes a pile of money. Usually you're okay until there's a pile of money there. And then, because what happens is these guys over here say, well, wait a second. We have an idea what to do with that $5,000. And these guys over here say, well, we earned the $5,000. We work hard to make the $5,000. We're pretty smart at doing this. Thank you very much. We don't need your ideas. And then these folks say, well, wait a second. We created you. We made you. And then you guys say, what do you think you guys said?
We're a corporation.
We're a legally autonomous entity.
Yeah,
look at Lieg here. Well, maybe that, maybe not that. But we are, look at what it says about a 501c3. Why, I mean, why do you create a 501c3 corporation? To make a legally autonomous entity. One of the ways that I found most effective to help sort this conversation out is this way. We create legal entities to interact with the world around us. We don't create a legal entity because we need to figure out a way to communicate between these two service bodies. We already have that. Our guiding principles, our 12 traditions. We create 501c3s because, like Jack said, the IRS wants to hear from us once we start collecting more money. The state tax board wants to hear from us because now we're generating revenue that they should be able to tax. Hotels want somebody to sue. There needs to be a legal entity signing the contract, and I don't want to sign a contract that puts my house up in case something goes south. Every reason that a corporation is created is external. It's about interacting with the world around us. It's not a whole lot different than getting a phone line, renting a post office box, or anything else that we do when we're talking about external communication and relationships. Our internal communications and relationships are guided by our 12 traditions, right? And in our service manuals and in our traditions, we are reminded that committees create subcommittees, and those subcommittees are spiritually subordinate to the committee that created them. Usually, that sorts it out for people so that they can begin to get their head around what applies where, and where are my boundaries, and where, and by the way, there's no service committee in Narcotics Anonymous that's autonomous, right? Can anybody come up with an exception for that? There's no service committee in Narcotics Anonymous that's autonomous. What's autonomous is our groups. There was a point I was going to get to there, and
It'll come back. So, Steve's highlighted it really well. I think most of us in this room understand the challenges. Probably many of us have experienced the challenge of sitting in a RSC or a board of directors meeting and hear opinions or verbiage that makes the whole room uncomfortable. Something along the lines of, you're accountable to us, and they'll say something, well, maybe spiritually, but not legally, and if you direct us to do something that we aren't allowed to do legally, we can't, and then pretty soon GSRs are concerned, and RCMs are concerned, and I think most of us have seen these types of patterns play out, often far worse than that. So Steve's highlighted the need that there has to be a connection. There's probably two. There's the external connection. So in the articles of incorporation, whatever governing documents establish, whatever the legal entity is, there has to be some acknowledgement of what they're there to do and how that accountability works. Now, there are some legal issues that surround that. We're not going to give legal advice. But somehow in those governing documents, it's important to acknowledge who they serve, why they serve, and who they're accountable to. Internally, we can be a lot clearer because guidelines and things can be a lot more precise because they aren't legal documents in the same way. And in our internal communications, ideally, there would never be any confusion about that accountability. So we've got examples on the table. I don't think we're going to go into them in great detail, are we?
No, they are just simply there as examples for you to see.
So we've got NorCal, Tri-State, NA World Services, bylaws, and articles of incorporation. And I believe those tend to be entities that have board of directors that oversee offices or have corporations that are accountable to the RSCs. Is that mostly correct?
The second part is correct, yeah. Okay. I mean, some of them have they all have offices. A couple of them have conventions.
Okay.
You guys have any conventions?
No, we have a separate.
I haven't read them. That's why I'm asking the question. Another example is my home region. We're a little different because we don't have an office. So in our case, we have association that's incorporated where the region RCMs and the region admin are the board of directors. The board of directors doesn't meet too often. And so that largely eliminated a gap between a separate board of directors. That wouldn't work everywhere, but that happens to work in our particular situation. So there are some examples you can look at, and probably every community has to consider, as we talk about in the PR handbook, you have to inventory your needs, look at your resources, you can compare best practices, and find what works best for you, what hybrids, what permutations of structure work for you. But the underlying governing principle has to be one of accountability. There has to be accountability. And I think there has to be orientation when new board of directors come along, when new RCMs come along, because what I've witnessed, and I suspect many of you have, is it's okay for a while, and then there's that, you know, healthy rotation of service that we strive to achieve, and somehow the message gets lost, and people get confused. I know, at my RSC, we do an annual orientation of what's the relationship between this corporation we have and the RCMs and the other people sitting in the room in our conventions, and it seems like half the room has no clue every year, and yet we do it every year, and the guidelines are on the web. It's all there for someone to read, but it's important, I think, to communicate over and over again. This is an area where an ounce of prevention is always worth a pound of cure, and having to come in and have some big drama or unfortunate situation relating to this divide. So do you want to, anything more we want to catch up on these, or you want to start into the...
Let's start into that.
Yeah, okay.
So how many people here serve currently or have served on a board of directors or on a 501c3? So over half the room. What kind of questions or challenges have you seen?
Sure.
Thank you, Nick.
Oh, I thought you were kidding. No,
it's not rhetorical, Stuart.
How long is the workshop?
You got about 10 minutes to answer.
Well, I think Jack was hitting it on the head, is the relationship between the board and their single point of accountability.
The subordinate relationship between the subcommittee and the service committee.
Yeah, and you see that outside, wrong-sized, both directions several times, and rarely do we get it quite right. And I think, I'd say, in addition to orienting your board members to what that relationship needs to look like, is the accountable body needs to have a little bit of an orientation to it as well in terms of that. But, I've served on a number of corporations for NA for a long time, and the thing that I see is exactly what Jack said, is that we kind of get that right balance or get the right thing going, but we don't dummy-proof our corporations, because we're not really trying to do rocket science with these corps. But it should be a very simple function, and when we get some creative people involved, for instance, Florida RSO, we had you know, somebody that had Fortune 500 experience that started thinking, well, let's start giving tax and legal advice to the areas because they want that and they need that, and let's start getting into a lot of these things. And it's like, no, these need to be very single focused and as small as focused as possible. And I'm convinced that regional service offices should be distributing literature, high volume, low cost, and probably little else.
Okay, so Nick's got a couple of things there. So again, what we're looking for, not necessarily solutions here, we're looking for challenges and questions. And what we hope is we're going to get a list of challenges and questions, and then we're going to have you discuss some of your experiences with those challenges and questions.
And maybe get some solutions at that point.
That's where we're headed. Yeah.
Hey, my name's Eric. I'm at it. At least as relates to conventions, one of the challenges I've seen is continuity of service, especially when you have a recurring convention. So, for example, up in Northern California, where we have NCCNA, which is a very large convention, yeah, it generally takes some amount of time past the end of the convention to close the books.
Yeah.
And we had a scenario a couple of years back where there was problems with the books and they couldn't be closed.
Yeah.
And I forget exactly which number it was, but you know, the NCCNA convention, the committee, was good about being responsible, but as soon as the convention was over, it was the NCCNA 38 chair showing up.
Yeah.
Whereas it was the NCCNA 37 chair that had all the information. And so when we would ask, well, what's going on with the books? He would say, well, I don't know.
Yep.
Because, you know, we actually ended up passing a resolution to force the outgoing chair to keep coming to RSC to report
yep,
until the books were closed. But in general, like, a lot of institutional knowledge goes out with the prior
yeah,
people.
Yeah, so maintaining
serving
the continuity yeah of service on a project-based
right,
activity
and
like
making
a,
sure
a,
there's
a
good
event.
Yeah, making sure there's good knowledge transfer from
yep,
you know, 1 year service board to the next, since they may be like completely different people.
Yep.
What we do with CERNA, the Palm Springs Convention, is the vice chair is next, the next one in line. So there's
speak
a
up, please.
Yeah, I think he's in the solution, as we often are.
Yeah.
You're in the solution?
Yeah.
Yeah, hang on. Hang on.
What they do with CERNA.
Hang on, please. Corporate Warden.
Okay.
Do you mind?
I don't.
Thank you. Challenges and problems. Questions.
I don't know if this fits.
Go ahead.
But here in San Diego, in my observation, it's only my opinion observation, it seems that the RSC meetings tend to be extremely long and laborious.
Okay. So what's that got to do with the relationship?
It does. Yeah, I didn't know if it fits. Like I said,
okay,
that's a challenge.
Kind of does, and Stuart touched on it a minute ago there too, and Jack was talking about it also. One of the challenges that I've witnessed from what you folks tell me is the communication link, the relationship. Forget about the legal entity, just the relationship between the committees, right, between the subcommittee, and that's what I'm going to call these entities because that's really what they are.
Right.
They're subcommittees. When an RSC or an ASC with a 90-day wonder on it creates an entity, that entity is functionally a subcommittee of that ASC, regardless of their legal status.
See, Paul Mitch is just kind of a lack of interest of the RSC.
I don't know that it's a lack of respect. It's almost sometimes.
We're finding the right size. Again, I'll go back to what Stuart was talking about. Is what I was hearing from you is there needs to be a communication. The challenge is finding the right balance. And do we expect our subcommittee chair people to sit through the entire RSC? Many do. And as a subcommittee person, should you acquiesce to that expectation of the RSC or the ASC? Yeah, so there's that challenge. You're going to solutions. I can see it in your eyes.
No.
You sure?
You got a problem.
He sneaks in a solution. You got to watch it. So you got to do like this guy's done.
We still haven't even solved it yet.
All right.
And this is on an area level. We, as an area, we have two different conventions. One of the convention is incorporated. And the corporate board, the challenge is to get the corporate board to be responsive in some way to the area, and when the area asks them to do things like submit a budget or do those things, the corporate board has up to now still not complied, and the area doesn't know what the hell to do about it.
Yeah. So that's a common concern.
Yeah, that's what we've been outlining.
The subcommittee is not responsive to the requests of the of the of the ASC or RSO. Thank you.
Good problem.
Yes, sir.
And in the New England region, kind of what Jack was touching on, the New England, we have the New England Regional Convention Corporation, so we're incorporated for the running of the convention, but the members of the corporation are all of the RCMs, who, and they change, you know, there are 14 areas in our region, so they're constantly changing, and we meet every once every 2 months, so new RCMs are coming in, and then if we call, if we have to call a corporation meeting, they have no idea. About, they thought I was just an RCM coming from my area to, you know, bring what's going on in the area. So I guess it comes down to, again, it's communication. What we started to, well, I don't want to get into the solution, but that's a problem, is communication.
Well, yeah, and it's a great point that each model has its own challenges and its own benefits, right? The model, Jack and I, when we were preparing for this session, we were kind of comparing notes. And, you know, I come from Pittsburgh, Tri-State, and, you know, where we had the separation. And he comes from Pacific Cascade, no,
Washington,
Northern Idaho, where they've incorporated the RSC itself. Exactly.
Look, I forgot to tell you, I led the ad hoc that did it.
Yeah, well, so, you didn't have to tell me. I kind of figured that out.
Everybody loves their own baby, you know.
A little too much. But all of them have challenges, is the point. And while that model, and by the way, the model you just described is that one set of guidelines that we brought from Washington, Northern Idaho, that shows the RCMs as members of the board of directors. It's an interesting approach. And of course, you know, just like
it, but Steve, you point another great challenge. It's a very passive board that should hardly ever meet. And so if you've got an active RSO, it's dysfunctional.
Yeah. Well, at ours, they're not members of the board of directors. They're members of the corporation, and they, as members of the corporation, elect the board of directors who meet separately.
Members of the
another permutation.
They are members of the corp.
That's a solution.
No, this is part of their problem. These uninformed RCMs
has another challenge.
Well, and you know, again, this kind of goes back to, you know, how you select boards to do these things, but it's really the qualifications of, you know, so we're talking about, do you incorporate, if you're talking about New England's doing, whereas you had like Region of Virginia's that's now whatever the hell they're.
Central Atlantic.
Central Atlantic.
It's a new millennium.
I know. Right? And I'm from there.
You're an ASR, Stuart.
I know you did.
So they had an interesting board set up where their board was self-elect, but would get representatives from the areas, not the RCMs. And that had a very very clear role in terms of the accountability, except they could come report back. So they weren't really, they weren't directors. They were just, you know, come and take
area
some notes.
Area board representatives.
And they just come and take some notes. Yep. And then the board shows no accountability to the region, and they're kind of using the name's name, but have no direct accountability back to any service body of Narcotics Anonymous.
And so nothing's all good nor all bad. You know, that had, there were some good ideas behind that, you know, that model.
You know, and it was, that model has some, you know, and you know, so there's a lot of spectrums between incorporating the whole body, having your RCMs.
Yep.
So there's some good arguments against doing that. At the same time, you know, Florida's model is interesting because they have a certain number of board elect positions and a certain number of regional elected position.
Yep.
So you have that accountability, that separation. And the
you're in the solution.
The variation of
yes.
The problem is having variations and knowing which one to do.
Yeah.
With a membership that doesn't understand or think that they point to the tradition and say we're unorganized, we should never be organized.
And so regardless of the model, really, truly, regardless of the model,
you're in the solution, man.
Regardless of the model,
you're the fucking solution, man.
The
tradition without the whole tradition.
one of the most fundamental challenges is the nature of the communication between those service bodies.
We just saw it.
And right there. Exactly. Right. So let's try and let's see if we're are we ready to try and figure
I
out
think, some. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Maybe we got enough there.
Yeah. So we want to we want you to focus in on a couple of these issues to talk about in your small groups. How shall we do this, Jack?
How do you want to divide it up? Give everybody
well,
a separate topic.
Let's see. Do we have related topics here?
Communication.
Or maybe a way to do it is to talk about. I think we have a couple of different general categories. We've got composition of our service of our legal entities.
Right.
Right? We've heard a couple of different models. People have different ideas about composition of a service entity. So maybe there's some benefit in one group talking about some of the benefits and some of the challenges associated with composition. We have two basic styles. Well, there's actually a couple. There's more than two. There is the corporation and the let's say RSC just for this. The corporation and the service committee. And the corporation executes the service delivery, so like a convention corporation. We've got a service body, our service relationship where you have the RSC and a corporation that oversees multiple activities like a service office and a convention. And then you've got the idea of a service body that is the corporation. Yeah.
You're trying to come up with three, so I'd suggest composition, function and purpose, then accountability and communications as your three topics.
Say again.
So this one. Compensation and qualifications. The next one would be your
You said accountability, right?
Well, the second one would be your... No. So the first one is composition and...
Who's in it?
And qualifications.
Yeah.
Your second one would be your functions and responsibilities. And your third one would be communications and accountability.
That pretty much sums up all of them.
Functions and
responsibility. Yeah, that'll work. Yeah. And communication and
accountability.
Because that kind of covers unresponsive board of directors as well as the board of directors. So those are broad enough. You can all diverge a little bit to what you really like to talk about here. Those are principal topics that relate to a lot of different scenarios that you've encountered.
And this is where your ideas of what we do comes in. You know, best practices this is where we like to hear about best practices, not just about your vision for what things could be if you were king. Because you're not, I'm sorry. But more of what you see work. That's where the real benefit is, because right where this is about experience, strength, and hope. And certainly it's about creativity and free thinking, but there's nothing like some solid experience with something. So
maybe Steve, the other thing to mention is, like Steve said at the beginning, this convention toolkit, convention guide update is being done. I think it's very possible that some good ideas out of that will lend itself naturally.
Yep.
That might come out of here. So be aware, if you got some ideas that are useful, some best practices, I think the hope is, in part, that plays into, as we work on this convention book, what might be in it.
So, yeah, I'm really dependent on you folks. I mean, we're dependent on you folks and people like you to bring forward, because nobody is more equipped than the people who sit on our boards to give us that kind of information to build the library of tools. Yeah.
You mentioned the convention guide. Is that available? Where is it from? Central or?
So, at one time we had a conventions handbook.
Okay.
And it was written in the 80s. I don't know if anybody's negotiated a contract since the 80s or attempted to execute a convention since then, but it was antiquated. So in 2006, I think it was, the World Service Conference made a decision to remove it from inventory. So we no longer, it's no longer available. But there's this void. There's really no other written resources produced by any World Services that talks about conventions. And there's nothing that talks about 501c3s. It keeps on getting, it's been prioritized a number of cycles, but we just haven't had the resources or the bandwidth to take it on. This cycle, we're taking it on as a result of the surveys that happened in the CAR. CAR had four different surveys in them. One of them was about service material, convention handbooks, to nobody's surprise, raised right to the top. So David gave us this opportunity to have this conversation, and we're thinking that some of this stuff is going to end up in that.
Kind of impossible to talk about conventions in 2016 without also considering some of the legal things.
Yeah.
Is this going to be just a U.S.-centric book, or are you going to address NGOs in a variety of environments?
I don't know.
We probably don't know, but that's a great question for another time. You could write that to worldboard@na.org and we'll let you know.
I've come to the conclusion that that phrase means piss off and don't.
No, Stuart. No, Stuart.
No.
We factor everything in. It's important.
No. I take offense to that.
Actually, Stuart, everything
spam,
on the cigar,
spam.
It all gets read, and it all is factored in. For real. For real. Yeah. And so if you have any input, we'd love to hear it. Because maybe something about NGOs says value.
You know what? That is one of the huge challenges when we get into these kind of conversations. Is, you know, I was on the phone yesterday or 3 days ago with a person from Ontario, Canada. And I know just enough about U.S., about this topic in the United States to get myself in trouble. I probably know little enough about this in Canada to get myself arrested. You know, and then if you start talking about, you know, somebody, I'd say 98% of the conversations I have are with people in the U.S., because that's where there is a preponderance of, especially area-level activity, where 501c3s are formed and people don't have a clue what they're doing. Well, they have a clue, but they find themselves deep into waters they didn't really recognize initially. And that's almost always U.S. But it is. It's important to remember that we're a global fellowship, and whenever we're producing this kind of stuff, we attempt, as we are able, to try and make it viable or useful for people outside of the U.S.
So it's maybe something, some of the best practices as a section that's going to be...
Well, yeah, here's a universal statement that works across the fellowship. Regardless of your legal status, you are spiritually subordinate to the committee that created you. I would say that anywhere on the planet.
Absolutely.
You could land me anywhere, and the 12 traditions apply. So there are universal applications. It's when we start to get down into that minutia of, you know, how a corporation is formed or...
And Tom might be able to speak this better to me, but my understanding is as we develop literature, that you try to consider the global audience first and have principles. Peer Handbook's a great example. There's a whole bunch of principles. Then there's some practical stuff that might be U.S.-specific or other country-specific, and I think the consideration, is that correct, that the consideration is worldwide, but then sometimes you naturally find yourself dealing with more with the United States or some other area?
Right, and in this particular project where we are, in this project is in the gathering of input part of the planning cycle. That's what we're looking for now. And it isn't going to be a handbook as much as it is going to be a series of tools. Some of it lists, some of it templates, some of it some written guidelines, some of it might be some electronic files that will help you with your accountability and your financial aspects or your registration aspects. And I'm really glad that you brought up that there are other compositions and different types of organizations.
Well, and then maybe it's helpful because there are so many events and so many kind of corps in the U.S. that once we kind of have an idea of what the tools and stuff are, then you can solicit some of the other developed fellowships in terms of what it looks like.
Get it from the other countries.
No, and basically, yeah, just you have your ingredients and the local ingredients look a little different.
Well, I look forward to the day that we have some ingredients.
I'm sure some of the problems we have in you are Washington or Pennsylvania are the same they're having in Peru or England. Our fellowship seems to have a lot of similar problems wherever we are.
Okay. No. I was just trying to get my head around what you're trying to.
So some of this is like this. In my mind, this part of this is a U.S.-centric conversation. These ones, I think, are absolutely universal. Function and responsibilities, functions and responsibility, communication and accountability are global topics, I believe.
Right, so do you want to sign copies?
So we have three tables. This one's a little light on membership, but we want to do Jack.
Would anybody like to volunteer to go?
I just got on my way.
Would you like a table?
No.
They need a female perspective down there.
Okay, yeah. Looks like we're a little better evened out. Steve, do you want to sign copies?
Yeah, let's go with composition.
Oh, cool. Okay, composition.
It's just function and responsibilities, and communication and accountability.
Now, pretty much everyone, everyone has been here for small groups before, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, instructions are there, there's the ground rules.
Yeah, so one of the things you want to do is pick a facilitator, right? Yep. Somebody keep the conversation moving. The other thing you want to do is somebody needs to be a recorder, a scribe. And there's some notes. There's some note sheets there. The scribe, we're going to collect your notes. And we're going to put your name on them and post them on Facebook. No, we're not going to do that. We are going to collect them.
So if you can write
legibly, that would be really helpful. And
hey, you got a scribe, you got a facilitator.
And complete thoughts are helpful when you're scribing. Complete thoughts are really helpful.
Does anybody want to volunteer?
Nobody else wants to.
You really are.
All right.
Who here has served on the?
I don't know about you guys. But I need a little clarification. When you give us functions and responsibilities, it's a little. What is what would be a successful working practice? What would be successful
I think. Looking at the challenge of defining what the functions and responsibilities are, I think a lot of it gets back to who's accountable, who's responsible for what, and what is the function of the, for example, a board of directors as it relates to serving the needs of the fellowship. Because one of the challenges, I don't know quite how it is in NorCal, at least before, but we had our board of directors, there was a challenge in understanding why they existed, what they did, and what they should do.
Yeah, we have an RSO, so it's actually really clear.
I know that there's not any incorporation or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars every single year. You know, it's a large amount of money.
Somewhere has to be.
Well, then we just use the RSO and
the
World
Service. Right.
Yeah. Which RSO is it? Your Regents?
Yeah.
It's the same thing here.
Yeah.
NCCNA is
Regional Service. From a scribe perspective of noting some of it, because some of the things you guys just know, other people have no clue.
Okay.
I mean, seriously, so we have a board of directors. They, in this case, are they the people that do they assign assigners for the bank accounts? Is that true? I don't know. Sure. Yeah, okay. That's probably different. The RSC might have a separate bank account.
Yeah, and so we have, the RSC has a bank account. The RSC has a bank account, the RSO has a bank account, and CCNA has a bank
account. Right. Yeah. We kind of confused those. Some of the examples, I think, because I think what we're trying to address is the challenge of what seems to be sometimes an inherent tension between the fellowship and how we're used to, having our groups directly responsible for those they serve through our representatives, and these legal entities we create that legitimately have some other concerns, like we have to file taxes, we can't just do X, Y, and Z.
Okay,
all
right, so I'll throw one out there for you, which is that. Some of these subcommittees like NCCNA don't set guidelines, right? And so they can kind of operate however they want to. They have complicated guidelines, like how they have a pool, because frankly, there's more people that serve on NCCNA than serve on RSC. I mean, I'm proud of part of that. So sometimes there can be issues with regards to
the details of those guidelines kind of not matching up. And one of the ways in which they solved that was by having those subcommittee guidelines ultimately be reviewed for acceptance by large.
That's a great example of that challenge of lack of harmonization.
So it would be sort of guidelines for subcommittees being transparent to
and harmonized between different entities. You don't want them in conflict, or you might even say in those cases where they are, we had to do that at ours because we have sometimes host committee guidelines inadvertently or in conflict with the RSCs. So we actually define that if there's a conflict, you know, the RSC is what comes first. But as you're brainstorming, just think about
the guidelines for subcommittees.
I don't know much about this at all.
To the committee, to the service bodies they serve.
Are you guys good for it?
Yeah, I think so.
Just kick it off enough you can.
And
if not all are exceeded, it gives me a different perspective.
To the bodies they serve.
Did I get stuck again?
All right, well, so using that as sort of kickoff.
Can you read that again, please?
It's the guidelines for subcommittees harmonizing and being transparent.
I was just listening.
Yeah, no. Okay, so what other sort of examples, solutions do we have as related to function and responsibilities?
All right, well, and I'm not sure if this is required to bring it up, but we actually have an app ready to form right now to increase that. So that is to
be a price increase. Well, so are there. Yeah, I mean, so this is an example of who's forming the app, the RSC, or you are in what capacity? So it's the board forming an app.
Yes.
Okay. And that app.
Well, I think you can head that or under functions and responsibilities. I would actually say that into accountability. I know it says accountability right there, but also we have a responsibility to be transparent and have accountability. So forming that ad hoc is sort of us being accountable. Because there's.
Right. I mean, it's not from the members of the area, and it was actually something that was already on top of.
It's a challenge that they're concerned that something wrong with the right. And you're doing that as the RSO because you feel fiduciary responsibility.
Members first have to go to the RSC and they become pool members. And then after they become a pool member, if there's an opening on the board, then that's where the board draws from potential board members from that pool.
So your regional, your RCM?
RCM initially is where you go for that.
How many members of the board?
I've been in SoCal and I've been doing service all the way up to the region. Okay? And I've never heard anything like that.
Me either.
Never.
I'm a baller.
No, because now you're talking. I'm just saying. That's why I'm like shaking my head. I'm like, what? No. That's. I understand the legalities of it. I'm like, this is all baffling me.
So what part is baffling?
Yeah, I don't understand what's
Board of Directors, this drawing, only the board can elect the board.
No, 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 no. If you want to be, do service at the RSO here in San Diego, you got the process is you attend three meetings.
Sure.
Then you go to the RSC and you're voted onto the board of directors pool.
Okay. That makes you
The board meeting.
You have to come as a non-participant.
Non-participant once a month.
Really? It's just, so basically what you're saying is that your RSC.
The RSC approves.
Is the board.
No, the RSC approves. So, all right, so this actually goes to the
function of responsibility. We don't have a corporation
that I run. So let's start by putting down here, right, you know, functions and responsibilities, like communicating to the fellowship, so what are here now is like you're in this region and you're not aware.
Oh, I'm not in this region. No, I'm just up in my region.
You're in your region.
They don't have it.
Well, not so not.
But it's okay.
Yeah, no. That's why I'm saying I've never heard. That's
okay. I understand. I thought you were in this region.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the license is. And then, all they do is sell it.
Yeah. Okay. So roles are boggling.
That's what's boggling. I'm like, where did this come from?
So RSOs typically are responsible for literature sales.
Sure.
And they may have a physical office.
Yeah, we have
that. In some cases, like in San Francisco, they have an ASO where they have their own.
Okay.
Right. If the RSO is incorporated, then it needs a board.
Okay. See. All of that is just attached to the WSO because it's just down the street. So there's probably why I never have even bothered or even seen that section, because the WSO is right there. The WSO we all know is incorporated. I think it just practices off of their insurance and everything else.
So you just can't come off the street and go to a RSO meeting and get elected onto the board of directors. That doesn't happen.
Okay.
That the first step is you go.
Yeah.
As a non-participant.
Yeah.
And you're elected as a pool member.
It's just I've never heard the term board of directors. See, I know about board of directors, corporate entities, and all that stuff. I've just never heard it applied in the Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
And I've been around for 30-something years.
Any service office needs a board.
Yeah.
Anything
that's incorporated needs to have a board of directors.
Now, in some cases, for example, an NCCNA, which I keep referring to, is a huge service body, but it is not separately incorporated. It uses the RSO. Right.
Okay.
So therefore, right, all the money and all the 501c3.
Yeah, the RSO does have it has the nonprofit status. So I'm guessing it would be have a board.
Yeah. So it has to have a board. If it's incorporated as a nonprofit, so sort of functions and.
It's about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
They're just explaining.
Kind of bogged down.
They're just explaining some stuff. I'm sorry about that.
It's all right.
That's why I'm asking.
Well. In terms of functions and responsibilities, each function that a board, that an office does, has to have a responsibility attached to it.
Right. Yeah.
So we sell literature. That's one of our functions. So it's our responsibility to review what we're going about to do.
So what I was going to
do. The pricing.
Totally. So what I was going to suggest is making it clear that artists and board members recognize they have to do their responsibility, which is what you were doing, right? Because that's really the issue, is making sure that the RSOs take fiduciary responsibility for things like, literature sales and those things that they are responsible for as an office. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would even take it a step further that the function should be well defined.
Yeah.
As well as the responsibility attached to that function.
Right, okay, so we're sort of well-defined functions. Our associate have well-defined functions, including fiduciary responsibility. Our associate have well-defined responsibilities. Including fiduciary responsibility to the RSC.
No, that's just like a regular normal set of guidelines. There's
defined functions in the bylaws as well.
Well, it's just, now I'm like,
I want to bring up this guy here because that was the strangest one I ever heard of, right? Where in his case, they have RCMs actually serving.
They're members of the corporation.
Members of the corporation.
Chartists in the region. and then we have the New England Regional Convention Corporation. We're incorporated strictly to oversee and give financial direction and oversight to the convention, the New England Regional Convention. So our region is not incorporated. We don't have an RSO. The incorporation is strictly for the convention and the technical of the convention.
So who are the board members?
The board members are elected by the corporation, which is the RCM. So the RCM, when plenty of people are voting in their area, they elect, exactly. They elect the board members. They also elect the officers. The RCMs elect the president, the secretary, and the board.
So what I would draw from this potential responsibility is creating clarity on the mechanisms for election and process. So I like to be responsible, because I hear you saying in that scenario, one of the problems is RCMs don't even recognize that they're members of the corporation.
That's right.
So that's like the inverse problem that we have.
Because we have, whenever we have a corporation meeting, once a year, a corporation meeting, the board meets every like so the corporation meeting, I have to start out by explaining, as RCM, you are members of this corporation, board members of the corporation. So it's now part of our, like, RCM, introduction value things that put in that they are also members of a voting member of the corporation.
So I think the bullet point would be the functions and responsibilities. I don't even know how you say that. Clearly defined process for
So what happens is, like, we have to open a corporation meeting to elect a board member, for example. Well, what we're saying is we have it within the RSC. So the RSC closes down. The regional chair will say, this meeting is now suspended. And then it comes over to me, and I'll open up. I'll get everybody to physically get out of their chairs and move to the city's room so they see the separation. We are not part of the RSC. We're a separate body, legal entity. And then we'll have the corporation meeting over there, do our business, and then come back. Our court sends the minutes of the corporation meeting out there separately in the RSC.
Right, because that's a concession. I'm not sure how to turn this into a bullet point on functions and responsibilities.
I don't have a solution. The only solution that...
I mean, the only thing that's consistent here right now, like, having a voting
right. That's inconsistent because my red side is around here, but the thing is, what I try to do as a solution to the problem before that, they were just having the corporation meeting right at the table with the RSC. So what I'm trying to do, as showing the responsibility of the corporation, the RSCM, as corporate members, is to show that it's a separate thing.
Okay, so how about this? When service or committees are mingled with service corporations, create demarcation between the roles that members are
engaged in. I think we've got a great one on the head, except also,
now you want to, if you want me to say that again,
yes, I know
you
do.
Okay, when service board committees, when service board no, committees. It might not be members, right? But when service board committees are mingled with corporate activity,
if you're not listening to what the area is, secretary, we don't know what's going on.
Create clear demarcation.
Well, it's there. Actually, to be more specific,
as to the role it is, as to the role of the
I think that there seems to be, what I'm hearing, that the responsibility is even stronger for the RSC to really clearly clearly, I think that all its members clearly understand what their duties and roles are. To me, that seems like you would have to revisit that almost any time you have a new member.
Exactly right. So why don't we add as part of the solution, right? RSC is providing ongoing training to RCM.
You can never have enough training or enough communication. You can't have too much work.
So RSC is providing ongoing training to RCMs. Like this would even include you asking questions about.
Yeah, no. What we do is we have each one has got like an alternate, and it's a 2-year position.
Yeah.
So basically, you're going to do at least 2 years in a position. That way, there's the knowledge learned in the first year. The next year, when you take the position, you already know what's going on, and you're already informed.
That's another. RSC is providing RCM ongoing support and training with regard to the relation of the RSC and because it's true, I mean, RCM show up in NorCal all the time, and they don't know what the board is, and they don't know what CCNA is, and they don't know what all this stuff is, and then these conversations go on, and people don't understand. But no, specific, ongoing support and training specific to the relationship of RSC.
See, our regional committee would be basically the board of directors. I'm sorry? Our regional committee would basically be the board of directors, as you guys
know.
And that's just the way, because we have a policy.
Are they incorporated?
I don't know.
Yeah?
I don't know. I really don't. I know we have a regular office and all this stuff. We do a large amount of money. I know that all the subcommittees in all the areas participate in that.
But do you have a large reserve, or do you kick the funds where they're supposed to go?
Oh yeah. It just goes up.
So
we only keep an operating
reserve.
Yeah, that's it.
Like the gentleman over here said, is that usually when you start experiencing challenges is when there's big piles of money. So
right.
We have an operating budget. We have the Palm Springs Convention.
We all know that. We're talking $100,000. That committee is responsible to.
Is that committee incorporated?
It's a subcommittee. It has to be because of the large amount of money that they deal with. Yeah,
okay, just if you can finish up where you're at, we're going to come back together.
It's almost as big as the SoCal Convention. Everybody goes to the next one. We take over the entire country. And it started out just being a gathering, local gathering.
You guys ready? Wrap it up. Final thoughts.
Yeah, it's been a place for 30 years. But that's the same thing they did, is that the vice chair is going to be the next chair.
You guys about
so it's continuing. It's not a...
Okay, let's start down here.
Yeah, most of the committee members are all between 2 years at a time.
Hey, yeah, we should start there. They won't stop. All right, we're here. Hold, but let's start here. Hey, Stuart, who's presenting over here?
But now that I think about it, we've got to have all that stuff because we have money.
Can I read that list?
Guys, if you could just be quiet and you could explain what it is you guys were doing when you present too, that would
okay. Thank you for the information, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm Tana Manadic. And at our table here, we discussed the composition of the incorporated service body. We went around the table and introduced ourselves and our experience with incorporated service bodies. We have members here from San Diego and Florida, Las Vegas, previously Virginia, and more of Florida as well, Seattle and New York. So we have a lot of experience in different parts of the country here. And looking specifically at our boards, we focused on San Diego, Florida, Virginia, and Nevada. And we found some differences in what they do and some similarities. So in San Diego, for example, they have 9 directors who are elected. They are the voting membership of the board at their regional service office. Those 9 are selected by their regional service committee.
into a pool, and then the office itself elects them into the directorship. They have term limits of 1 year, and 1 year terms and 2 year term limits, but if you move around, you can actually serve up to 7 years there, so they can retain their experience in that way. And the function of their pool, of their office, is to serve the immediate region area, providing literature distribution. Florida has a different model that they've been doing since 1983. It's been working pretty well over in Florida. It started off first just with an RSO to get literature availability and distribution there. Mike started off with a couple of members, and what it evolved into was a 9-member board, 5 of whom are elected by the RSC and 4 of whom are actually elected by the board itself. They don't have any term limits in Florida, and so that they can keep those who not only have lots of experience, but are continuing to perform well, because if you're not, then you're not going to get elected to another term over there. Their 9 members include the officers as well. And then eventually evolve the board for their convention corporation. So they have 2 boards there, and their other board uses the same model that's been working pretty well since 1983 at their RSO. Virginia's board selects its own directors completely. It's not coming from their RSC, and there have been, you know, at the past times in history, accountability problems there. So we went on to focus on Nevada. There's an area in Nevada where the area itself has a board to focus on the delivery of services for the area. So this is different than an RSO board, this is different than a convention board, and what Nevada has done is they've chosen have a board composed of 5 directors, and they are selected by virtue of their having been elected to other positions at the RSC. At the ASC, excuse me. So if you've been elected, you know, the chair, the treasurer, you know, certain specified positions at their ASC, who are automatically on this board and responsible for the functions that are overseen and carried out by the board. So that's a new model in the Nevada area, totally different from the other one.
The region does the same model, right, Dennis?
We don't have a board.
The region does. It's incorporated the directors or the officers of the region.
All right. As far as the Secretary of State is concerned.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they had a few different compositions here and different functions. You know, Florida serving a very vast number of regions as well as entities that are not part of in terms of their literature sales distribution, convention, and here with area services in a very large area.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time, but are there any brief questions?
I have a question. The bylaws, I know, all your bylaws include references to the parent committee. Northern Cal's bylaws are there as an example where they actually talk about the relationship with the RSC.
In the Florida model, the language is in there that each board member, the board and each board member individually has a fiduciary to follow all decisions made the regional service committee.
Yeah, something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Florida's not in their bylaws.
Absolutely.
In our region, it talks about that we were developed to take care of the region and all its groups, and it's also implied by the RSC voting us into the pool,
right,
that they are the governing entity.
Sure.
Yep.
Got it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sure. Derek, I'm still an addict.
One second. I'm sorry.
I just missed a couple of details on this table. Florida, it's 5 are elected by the RSC, yep, and 4 by the BOD.
Right.
Correct.
And Nevada, that's a, this, the one is an area.
It's a Southern Nevada area we're referencing.
And in Southern Nevada, it's 5 directors who are selected by virtue of their election to the RSC office. ASC, if you turn that up. Thank you.
What area is that?
Southern Nevada.
Okay. Anything else, Nick? You got
it? No, it's...
So the next
up, the Nevada one, the chair of the area is chair of the corporation, and the vice chair of the area is... just a very simple...
Yeah, so the ASC is the corporation.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, it's a separate corporate entity. The board's supposed to maintain a little bit of distance, but it is serving the administrative needs of the area.
Yep.
Okay, Eric.
Hey, I'm Eric. I'm still an addict. So we found the topic a little fuzzy. So other than sort of listing all of the possible functions and responsibilities that you could possibly have, where we'd be here forever, and we'd be talking about the NCCNA vice chair's response. Instead, we kind of tried to focus on some of the challenges that we found related to functions and responsibilities and definition, and then talk about some of the solutions and some of the different things that we saw, because even at this table we had some wildly different service structures. The first was working to make sure that guidelines for subcommittees were both transparent and harmonized with those of the bodies they serve. Right. So for example, you know, we run into this, I think I spoke before, where you know, convention committees, while they have autonomy to write their own guidelines, they're still responsible to the RSC, and there's still spiritual principles in play, and they can't just kind of be totally autonomous and do whatever they want. You know, there needs to be some amount of harmonization. The second was making sure that the RSO itself had well-defined roles and responsibilities, including fiduciary responsibility, and that was communicated to the RSC. So, for example, here in San Diego, you know, there was some question about the markup as relates to, you know, a piece of literature, right? And it's actually the RSO going out and forming its own ad hoc committee, you know, to go and look into that, right? And that's their job because they have that fiduciary responsibility, and maybe that is communicated to the RSC, you know, kind of, you know, understanding that relationship, right? So the third was creating clearly defined process for being able to communicate who is responsible, right? And so especially when, and this really bleeds into the next one, especially when you have scenarios like this gentleman from New England, who I'm still trying to wrap my head around, where folks may be asked to serve at the same time in more than one capacity, right? And so then this was sort of, we'll talk about New England in a second. When service board committee members are commingled with corporate activity, create a clear demarcation as to the members that the roles members are being asked to take. And so where this comes from is in New England, the RCMs are actually members of the corporation who then elect the board. So, you know, what they've done here, you know, so it can be the case that somebody can show up at an RCM and they can be like, okay, now we need a meeting with the corporation. So they stop, they go to another room, and they have like a closed member session where people put on their corporate hats. They act as the corporation and they do something like elect a board member or like do some matter of business and come back. And so the way in which he went to solve that problem was literally, like physically, pick people up and move them to a different room so that they understand that something different is happening here, right? To help them understand, you know, how their roles are changing. And you see that sometimes when, for example, you might have somebody who's sitting on a convention committee but not an elected position, but they also are like an admin member of your regional board, right? And so, you know, when are they giving what report, right? Yeah. And then lastly, RSCs providing RCMs ongoing support and training specific to the relationship between the RSCs and the RSO board members. Because even at this table, one of the things that we found was that not everybody understood the functions, in part because we all do it differently. Right? So someone's like, well, board member, what are you talking about? Board member, right? Because they don't have board member, right? So we, you know, talk about it in different ways. And so it's really the job of the RSC to be able to communicate that structure out so that the folks in the areas understand and that the people who are doing that service understand. And that would help to create some, you know, hopefully help to bridge the gap for some of those challenges of communication as relates to functions and responsibility.
Yeah, common understanding is probably the most challenging part, because people serve on the same service body but don't have a common understanding of the relationships. Yeah.
We're officially out of time. I want to take just a couple more minutes so we can hear from the last group before we close. Nick, did you get everything you needed?
Yeah, just don't tell the program chair that we're running late.
Most of this stuff was already covered by the other tables. But we have something really interesting for us is that New Mexico is, they have their corporation as a living, their strategic plan is a living document. It was an important change because they are able to adjust guidelines.
As we learn,
and as the need arises without having to report to region. And it's not that they don't have to report to region, of course, everything will be reported, but they don't have to wait for 2 months to make these things happen. So, but you're incorporated, right?
Our convention committee is
incorporated. So, had just a lot of conversation about transparency, the trickle-down communication, and then the upward communication, so between the home groups, and actually the end space where the convention was going on. So a lot of people just don't really know the mechanisms, they don't know what's happening, they don't know how to become a part of, and so that's all the stuff. I think that, you know, just more communication than anything else, and the ability to, and then what that really trickled down to is, are we training our newcomers well as GSRs, because we identified a couple places where that gap was, and so one region identified that as the RCMs not bringing things back to area, and another group identified that as the GSRs are not significantly trained to understand why this needs to come back. They're not taking good notes, they're not communicating it in their home groups, so it's really minimalized.
Because we're out of time, I just want to say thank you for participating. We'll try to use this input in a useful way. Steve, would you like to make a parting comment?
Did you hear? Did anybody hear anything new?
Yes.
Yeah.
So tell me one thing that you heard new. Somebody.
The strategic plan that New Mexico's using.
I don't know.
The strategic plan that you're using. Yeah. Thank you for that. How about something else you heard new?
New England's model for RCMs being on the board.
Yeah, that's a little different.
And Washington, Rhode Island.
Yeah, Washington, Rhode Island. Anything else new?
That RSOs exist around the country. Right? You don't have anything like that. Everybody
has a board. Stuart or something. Yes, San Diego's officers of their corporation are not board members. So they have separate board members and officers.
So, you know, I mean, I think one of the things that's clear that whatever we develop has to acknowledge that there is great variation in the way we do what we do. But we still have the same underlying guiding principles to, in my opinion, I'm pretty sure you guys would agree, that that we can build any model on, and as long as we're on that foundation, we should be okay. Yeah.
Can I just say one thing?
No, yeah.
I think that the root of these divisions is empathy. I mean, where there's no empathy, because we grow in knowledge and experience, and then we look at RSCs as if they don't have that, and then if we don't have the empathy to understand where they're at and talk to them at that place, then it creates these divisions.
So what do we do?
We continue to march to the mantra that you're talking about right now, but I'm thinking that ultimately as a person, as a leader that's been elected into these positions, I have to always ensure I understand where they're at. They're constantly changing.
Yep.
We're not always changing. So our level of knowledge goes up. Theirs isn't. So we always have to be empathic. We always have to I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
I always have to understand where they're at. And it creates peace in the relationships.
And confidence
and respect.
And transparency.
That's
and it's all based on, in my opinion, from my observation, watching you guys do what you do, it's all about exhibiting the subordinate relationship that we have to the committees that created us. When we exhibit that, they trust us, and the communication rises, and life is generally good.
Thanks, everyone. We're out of time. We really appreciate your time here today.
It's about procedure, right? I'm sorry, the procedure. It's a procedure.
You did a much better job.